This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpacked podcast, and this week I'm joined by three guests. I've got Matt Watts, I've got Lee Nolan, and I've got Cam Panasol. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Good morning, good.
Yeah, good, thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent, good, good. Nice and early today, actually, which is nice. Yeah. who knows what day this will go out, but we are recording towards the end of the week, and I think looking forward to a nice weekend. Before we get into our topic of the day, perhaps I'll start with you, Matt. Why don't we just go one at a time, introduce yourself and explain which company you work for?
Yeah, sure thing, Chris. So I'm Matt Watts, and I'm the worldwide CTO for NetApp's enterprise and commercial business. I've been with NetApp for about 15 years and spend most of my time talking to companies about typically more about IT strategy rather than the specific technologies.
Cam Panasol, infrastructure technology specialist for Atradius, Atradius global credit insurer. In the market. I've been working for Atradius now for 17 years, but I've started my IT career about 1999.
Lee Nolan, I'm CTO at MTI. I've been at MTI for over 2 years, been in the industry for over 20 between vendors and resellers.
Great. Okay. So let's talk about our topic of the day. Now, Matt and I, you and I have been talking on and off about various different topics recently, and we know that there's a lot of new technology coming into the market from vendors in terms of product refreshes, technology refreshes, completely new architectures, actually, and you know that could be just hardware as well as software. And one of the things we've been talking about is just how customers look at that landscape and make decisions about how they change that technology and move on, or whether they stay with the same technology that they already have. Yeah, most of us would say that we probably change our spices more often than we change our bank accounts. But I think the same probably happens in enterprise technology and definitely in enterprise storage. So I thought this was a great opportunity for us to get together and try and work out exactly what inflection points and what opportunities force or put businesses in a position to think maybe it's time we should look at a different technology platform and how that's both affected by individual companies, but also how people like yourself, Lee, as we'll get to, who help companies make those decisions, how they are supported. So, Matt, why don't you kick us off and just give us an idea of, you know, your view of where we are in the market today.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So it's kind of interesting because I think, you know, we're seeing this incredible pace of change and an incredible scope of choice. You know, people are looking at multiple different on-premises type technologies and now obviously looking at different cloud providers. And I think what we've all done, whether it's technology suppliers or cloud providers, is try and really simplify the way our technology operates. So I think whereas before, once you were kind of working with a particular vendor, with a particular piece of their technology, it was kind of easy just to stay with them and just go through the refreshes and sort of carry on the way that you always had done before. Whereas I think now, because it is more simple to adopt technology and people have such incredible choice, I think certainly the sense I'm getting is that people aren't just going through those standard refreshes. When there is a refresh that needs to take place, they actually seem to be sort of pausing, taking stock, and then thinking more strategically about, okay, well, what should our next investment be? And it doesn't have to be to just carry on doing the things that we've always done and just take the next thing from the vendor that we've always worked with.
But it's a challenge, isn't it? Because when you look at the market, there is such a huge degree of choice. So let me pick on you, Lee, there. You know, from your perspective, you know, just keeping up with the technology that is out there and the different vendors are producing and how that moves over time is actually incredibly difficult to keep on top of.
Yeah, and we see from various aspects of the market is at decision points. I'd agree with Matt that where there is a refresh point, where amortization is completed or there are new projects coming through, people and organizations are more inclined to look at the market and see what's available, excuse me. And under that basis, we as a solutions provider, we provide that advice to those organizations to make sure that the decisions are the correct ones. I think due consideration needs to be made. Whilst the market is disruptive, there has to be a reason for change. So which could be pull in the sense that there is the organization is asking for something different. which could be new projects, a more disruptive way of working, rate of change, the ability to drive new services, or it could be that there are issues, so pushing away from what they've currently got because there are issues on the current platform that have occurred, or platforms, so therefore a decision is made. One of the biggest things for consideration here, which has to be understood, is the cost of change. You know, the cost of change is quite a big one, and the skills change, because ultimately you need to make sure that the new environment, if you make that change, is run in an effective manner. So there's an awful lot of considerations that organizations have to take into account.
Yeah, I think I'd entirely agree. And Cam, you know, you're, I guess, towards the actual end user side of it than the rest of us are, in terms of actually being out there and designing and deploying specifically for within your organization. You know, you must see that, and especially if you've been in the same company the length of time you have, you must have seen that sort of challenge over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I would concur with what the guys have already said. I mean, typically we have followed very traditional replacement programs with the same vendors over time. But in more recent times, in line with the natural refresh cycle, we are trying to identify whether there are better ways of doing things and more meeting the ambitions from company goal point of view. So for us at the moment, one of the key things that we want to be able to do is to automate and to simplify and to be able to create more of a DevOps type structure where a more generalist role can actually do most of the function. So we're trying to sort of facilitate that in the refreshes that we're doing at the moment. But at the same time, we do have to balance it with costs in terms of not only the investment, but also in terms of people and understanding the journey they need to make to be able to work with such technologies. And it's quite a big challenge because we also face pressures from a business point of view to deliver on projects in a timely fashion as well. So it all has to be married together in terms of delivery and making sure that what gets delivered at the end really works as people expect. Moving away from the traditional vendors that you've used in the past also introduces an element of risk, because you're moving away from a technology that you know to a technology you don't know. And you have to be prepared for that part of the journey as well and accept that, you know, there will be some issues as you go along, but to be able to work through them and have the sponsorship really of the executive management above you to get there in the end.
I think the risk one is really quite an interesting one, because, you know, that's a big no-no for so many different companies. I used to work in a lot of large financials. So one of the things that we wouldn't do was take any technology from any company that wasn't, well, this is probably the unofficial line, but that we couldn't really sue if things went wrong. If things went really bad, we wanted to get our money back, or at least be able to take it out on somebody. We wanted them to have enough deep pockets to be able to fix the problem. But I think that risk factor is significant, whether you're a small business or whether you're a large business. And ultimately, you've got to find a way to work out how you mitigate that risk. What do we think on that?
Risk is an interesting one, and I think sometimes it's forgotten that there's a risk in not changing. You know, if you stay doing what you're doing, the risk there is that you're not progressing, you're not changing the business potentially, you're not removing maybe any issues that have occurred for many years that you've tolerated, or you are not being dynamic enough to be able to respond to the changing needs of the organization. So I think whilst there's clearly, and I mentioned it earlier about the cost of change, there's risk in changing, there's also risk in staying doing the same thing. So I think that needs to be considered as well. Just from my perspective as well, talking about risk, is it needs to be weighed. There's always risk in anything you do, but you have to weigh that up with regards to the gain that you're looking to achieve. And so what are the gains that you're looking at, and making sure that is a conscious decision-making process on how you're looking to make change inside the organization. Are the gains that you anticipate making and the diligence you've carried out on that way past any potential risk that you're looking to adopt as well?
And how would you measure that risk? I mean, what would you class as risk, Cam? The most obvious one is you don't know how to use the platform, you don't know how it operates, you don't know how it functions. But there's got to be risk around whether you feel like you're going to get proper support from the vendor, whether the vendor's going to be there when you really have a problem and you need to get them in. You know, risk could be a whole range of different things, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, from a vendor perspective, the risk factor is something you weigh. So with a company, when you're dealing with them in terms of procuring a solution, you're looking at, if I really get stuck and have a problem, how willing are they to help me in that journey to get out of that particular issue? And typically in the vendor selection we go for at the moment, that's kind of where we look to as well in terms of appetite to help and to sort of dip your hands in your pocket kind of thing from a vendor point of view to help these situations. So that's one part of it in terms of the technology. In terms of the human side of things, you try to mitigate as much as you can in terms of here's a new skill and here's how we can prepare, having the full dialogue and interaction from a technical point of view, as well as from a project point of view, to make sure that we are covering as much as we can. I mean, inevitably, there'll always be gaps, but you try to work through them.
Okay. I want to ask Lee a question really around that sort of like that risk profile too. And I'm going to be slightly leading here because Matt's going to have to put his fingers in his ears, or, well, actually you can't actually, because you've probably got something in your ears already, so you won't be able to do that. I want to use an example because it's probably quite relevant, bearing in mind we've seen Dell bring out a new platform just recently, and we've occasionally seen companies bring out new platforms. EMC brought out Extreme.io about, when was that? They bought them out in 2014. But, you know, you could look at other vendors. You could look at HP with Primera and things like that. When a new platform comes to the market like that, I see that as quite a big risk, because one of the things that I was always not told, or certainly is a sort of a truism, is that you never take things until it gets to version 3, because version 3 tends to be the better version. With Dell bringing out a brand new platform like PowerStore, that must introduce a certain degree of risk to how customers look at that and think, well, is that platform going to be fully featured, and you know, etc. So what do you think about that approach?
Yeah, product launches are always an interesting one. I think there's always a nervousness from any vendor when a new platform is positioned to the market. I think the version 3 item that you spoke about there, Chris, I think that still exists quite a lot in the market, where people, you've got your early adopters and then people waiting at the sidelines to see what's happened and what is the mature point that they should adopt without being a laggard and late to adopt. I think it's two sides. From a vendor perspective, there's two sides to this. One is moving the platform forward, the ability to make changes that maybe they couldn't make on other on previous platforms because there were certain restrictions technically. And so they see it as an opportunity to really drive into the market and take market share, right? That's always the premise around bringing these products out and updating and protecting what you've got. The challenge always with product launches is that it's a point of change for customers. And so customers do absolutely look at it and say, at what point has this been released? And has the vendor, when they've released a new product, devalued what I've invested in, which is always the risk, especially where potentially the vendor is trying to consolidate portfolios or change direction. It can lead to a devaluing of the investments that are already made and a drive to then have to change a architectural direction for a business because the path they thought they were on, they can no longer go down because of the change of the new product set. So there's the item of risk there. And I think what you tend to find vendors doing is having white glove approach on new product launches and new customers to make sure that the risk is removed as much as possible. There's always a feature compare. You know, what have I got versus what I had? And what have I now got versus the competition? You immediately open yourself up to, okay, this new product, how does it compare to another vendor? If you take PowerStore, and how does it compare to NetApp? How does it compare to HP? How does it compare to Pure? And all of that type of thing then throws up. But clearly, whether it's Dell or any other vendor, there is a view that says, well, we think we can take market share with it. It's an inflection point for any vendor, and I think it definitely carries risk, which is why there's such huge focus from the vendors in making sure that adoption. If you're a customer, it's absolutely the point to say, okay, is this the point that I can now make a change? Because it may have adversely affected you, and so you may want to change that and make that change, or you say, well, it continues to support my architecture, so I'll carry on.
So from your perspective, Matt, you know, as a vendor, you've got risk in both directions. You know, you could be the beneficiary of an inflection point, and you could be in there working with a customer and saying, well, this is a good opportunity to look at our technology. But also, you're a vendor that might be bringing out a new solution yourself and have to think about how that works with your new technology and other companies doing that. So, you know, how do you look at it from your perspective?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of interesting, having been with NetApp for 15 years, you know, we've been through this inflection point. So, you know, if I go back 3 or 4 years ago, as we were going through the sort of transition from 7 mode to the latest version of our ONTAP, you know, that was a very, very similar point. And you realize very, very quickly that it doesn't matter how easy you tell people it's going to be and how seamless, which is a word I kind of hate to use inside in IT circles, but you say how seamless the process is going to be. The reality is that you have a lot of companies that say, we trust you, we enjoy the technology you have, we can see where you're going and we'll come along with you. And then you have other companies who will say, well, this is an inflection point, and therefore it's an opportunity just for us to stop and think. You know, and at that point, they look at options. They'll look to the market and say, is this now the time where we need to think of a different strategy, a different vendor, a different technology, you know, taking a different approach? I mean, to Lee's point, you know, I always remember it was Tom Mendoza, I think, who used to work for us, used to say, you know, taking a risk is a risk and not taking a risk is a risk. You know, I think that that's kind of what we're seeing. And it goes back to sort of how I did my introduction, which is, technology changes, I think, are actually much, much easier today than they were in the past. So to go from a vendor's technology from one generation to the next generation, or to go from a vendor's technology to a different vendor's technology, there are always things around that kind of automation and orchestration and some of those integrations. But I think the process now of being able to switch is certainly easier than it was before. And I'm certainly seeing that, you know, when, even with, let's say, RFPs, you know, I think RFPs that I'm seeing being written now tend not to be written for a specific vendor, which was a trend that I certainly saw for a large part of the last kind of 10 or 15 years.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I remember writing many RFPs, and I remember working for companies that wrote RFPs. And I remember, unfortunately, being in a position where I had to help, I guess, craft an RFP. And then I looked at it and thought, hang on, this has been written specifically so that this vendor is the only one who can actually answer these questions. And the other vendors are going to come back and say, we can't support that. And you think, well, that's not really an RFP at that point. That's just basically an excuse to pick a particular vendor. So it's good to hear that you think that there's a bit more, or there's a bit less bias in the market than there used to be. Cam, going back to you, that side of the RFP side and selecting new technology, would you say that, you know, you look at it and say, well, do you know, we'll get a bit of technology and we'll try it out, we'll get comfortable with it, and then we'll make a decision to whether we think that's a new strategic vendor? Or does that itself introduce risk because now you've got multiple vendors in the environment and you have to work out how to support many of them? Because, you know, making a wholesale jump from one to another is a significant change.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is we are, like has already been said, we are making our RFP process a bit more generic. We look at what are the real requirements we're looking for and then put it out. But equally, from a vendor selection point of view, we try to keep it as lean as possible because we just don't have time really to go through all the vendors and say which one really ticks the boxes or not. So we are trying to be quite generic in our requirements from the point of view of input. You know, when people write RFPs and have written RFPs in the past, there has always been a technical bias, should we say, in terms of what people have tried to put within the RFPs and kind of not really suggested names, but made it very applicable to a particular vendor, for example. And we certainly have seen a move away from that position. But the challenge we have is, yes, you can go through an RFP process, and yes, you can get all the input in and you can go through it all, but it's a time factor as well. And in this day and age, I think time is a critical thing in terms of being able to do things quicker. I think with the RFPs, we've not gone for like the full blown RFPs anymore. We tend to go for what's called RFP lights, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. So you get a feel and a flavor for these things. And in my particular instance, we do a lot of research anyway in the background prior to any of these RFPs to understand what the market looks like. So we know when we're looking at solutions, which ones are the right ones to take a bet on and which ones are not. And we've certainly seen that in the past with storage replacements, backup replacements. You know, we've been sort of in the background incubating, shall we say, the technology and understanding which would be the right fit for us and aligning it to the business goals coming up. So that's kind of where we approach it from now. In the past, definitely, we were very traditional. Here's an RFP, you get a response back and you react in the normal way. But I think we have to be a bit more fluid at the moment in terms of any kind of interaction with that process.
Mm. Lee, just turning to you, I'm interested in, you know, just where Cam was taking us there in terms of, you know, that process and understanding how you reduce the RFP down to something that you might call RFP light. Today, we're seeing a lot more demand for new features, whether it's, you know, cloud, whether it's support for DevOps, as we talked about at the very beginning, whether it's the as a service consumption models. So things are becoming, to a certain degree, more complex, and as a vendor, you have a requirement to support a lot more. And for me, it's not always clear what the roadmap of that vendor is these days. You know, I look at a lot of the vendors and think, where are they going with this technology? Where is the future for them? Does that make your job that much more difficult when you're trying to help customers work out where to head?
I think it's different. I mean, I look at things like cloud, they're additional platforms. I think often even now, they can be misconstrued as the answer to everything. And I think there is a balanced approach. And as you still make decisions about where workloads and services can be deployed from on-prem, that same decision-making process is applied to, or should be applied to, public cloud services, SaaS services, etc. It's what's right for your business and what's the profile of those services. From a, you know, within the channel and as a solutions provider, our job, so RFPs are very much product specific or technology specific, we see those, but we also see RFPs that are about how do we manage the whole environment? What does this look like? So it's a multi-technology approach, multi-service approach, where we respond to RFPs in a different way. I think on the just coming back to the cloud side, I think there's still a level of immaturity. I still think the market, I say this probably way too much, but the market is bigoted still, where you have public cloud, people who are driving public cloud and people who are driving on-prem. And actually, our job and the market's job is to be objective and to understand what's right for that organization on the particular services that they're running. I hear strategies that are all about, we're just going to be on-prem, public cloud doesn't work, or we're cloud first. And this that's I find that kind of strange, because it should be, right, what services, what are we trying to achieve? And let's balance that out to what's going to be right for our business, and have an agile architecture and structure that allows us to leverage the right platforms at the right time to be able to move the business forward. Unfortunately, I still think there's that bigoted market. I think NetApp and other vendors are looking at this in a way that says we need to have this balanced approach, and therefore have a strategy that is all about supporting that center ground, which is let's just support what's going to be right for the business and the decisions they make.
Does that mean then that you think, and this is an open question to anybody to answer really, does that mean we still think that companies are siloed into their technology areas, and that we don't have a decent level of management or strategy higher up that's looking at it and saying, let's actually, rather than do an RFP for a storage box or a network switch or, you know, a hypervisor, I'm just picking random examples there, that we should actually be building RFPs that say, we want to build out a consistent data management platform, or we want to build out a global data network, or, you know, something like that. And really what we're not able to do yet, or not as well, is translate our business requirements into the technical requirements to make sure that when we build an RFP, or we go out and talk to a vendor like NetApp or whoever, that we actually can translate what business challenges we're trying to solve into something that that vendor can then help us with a technology solution.
So I'll jump in quickly on this one, Chris. And, you know, I'm sort of picking up on what Lee said about cloud first. In the sort of experience I have, what seems to happen, and it's not everywhere, but it does, but there seems to be a trend that we pick up these things and they become a mandate rather than a strategy. So cloud first, for example, you know, I would say to people, what's your cloud strategy? And they'd say, cloud first. And you go, well, that's actually not a strategy, that's a mandate. So what's your strategy to go cloud first? And they'd say, Amazon. Well, again, I don't want to be picky, but what you've got there is a destination. So what's your strategy to go cloud first and why with a destination of Amazon? And at that point, it wasn't as well thought through. You could quite often see that there was a lot of people who were just following mandates that were sort of being thrown down from above. And I think we're coming out of the other side of that now, because there was a lot of bad decisions were made. You know, if you're told to go cloud first and you just start dumping stuff into the cloud, you very rapidly find out that it was probably the wrong thing to do, or you hadn't been very clear in what was the value you thought you were going to get. So I think with all of these things, it takes a kind of a misfire, or it takes something to go wrong for people to then step back and go, well, it wasn't the wrong thing to do. We just went about it the wrong way. And I'm starting to see a little bit more of that kind of maturity. And that for me is very much a leadership thing. It's that leaders have to start recognizing, and maybe now they are starting to recognize, that their role is to give people the opportunity to embrace lots of different options, you know, to give people that sense of, let's do what we need to do because it's the right thing to do. It creates that agility that we need, not just because, you know, it's a mandate that, you know, somebody on the board has told us we've got to go to the cloud, so off we go. So I think there's a maturity coming in, but it always seems to take misfires to create that more mature approach.
But I guess you've got to be careful that you don't end up in a situation where you're just throwing everything at a wall and seeing what sticks. You know, you don't want to just, oh, let's do a bit of cloud, do a bit of this, and then just see what works. You need to be a little bit more strategic than that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say from our perspective, we're quite conservative in terms of how we've done things. And we were never early adopters in terms of cloud. And I think in a way we're paying or we're receiving some kind of benefit from that now, because we didn't just jump in feet first and said, let's do something and see what we can do. I think we're being a bit more measured. And in terms of the management structure we have, they are being very specific about it. Has to provide value. It's not just about dumping stuff on the cloud just because it's there and it's sexy and you can do all sorts of wonderful things with it. It's about having a real business need. So we are trying to leverage the investment we already have around things like Office 365 as much as we can, and then identify where we can also tailor what we need for the future in terms of what could come out of the cloud, but not an automatic assumption that's the best place for it to be, because at the end of the day, we also have to balance it with the cost. Because cloud is never cheaper. It's, you know, parity or a bit more. So we have to be mindful of that situation as well.
I would say, Cam, I wouldn't say cloud is particularly sexy, funny enough. Having actually gone on and done, you know, any sort of work with trying to work out how the hell things like VPCs work in Amazon, or, you know, you look at it and go, it's actually not that straightforward. And as you said, it's not that cheap. It's not really that much of a difference in terms of the way it works compared to on-premise, really, probably just a demand thing, you know, that you can go in to get what you want when you want it.
Yeah, I think the elasticity bit is the bit where it's very enticing. And so then you can look at the portfolio and go, wow, I can do all these wonderful things from end to end. And you go, well, how much is this really costing me? I mean, one of the things for me about cloud is it's a bit like you go in and do something and you think, well, how much is this really going to cost me? And you sit there with all the various cloud calculators trying to work out things and you never get the real answer. You know, there's always something you've missed. And there's things like that that you have to be very careful about in terms of that sort of decision. And that's why I'm glad in a way that we haven't jumped into it without having these sort of baseline skills in place in terms of being able to understand the architecture and the costings and what really should be there first.
It's back to that risk thing again, isn't it, really?
Yes. Well, our motto is managing risk, enabling trade. So we are very much looking at the risk factors in terms of trying to do things and trying to balance it against, well, what are we trying to enable?
I think there's a place for it. And this is me. Always I try and look at this from a center ground perspective. It should never be in politics, really. But my view is that the great thing about cloud is that it's speed. You know, a lot of developers, you know, really drove this. It was the SDK in Amazon. You know, the developers enjoyed it. They liked coding to it. That was what worked for them. And so you found a lot of these new applications that were being spun up. The developers were driving the adoption. So its speed is good, right? In the fact that it can run quickly and it can be spun down, right? So you've got this hyper agility when it comes to public cloud. And we put it all in one pot, but it's got a lot of different forms. But the fact of the matter is, if you've got a mature workload that really isn't doing very much and you're amortizing that over time, you're in control, you've got a cost model, then actually you probably look at that and say, well, it's, you know, for want of a better term, it's a stagnant workload. I'm going to keep it on-prem. And so this is why the conscious decision-making process about workloads and how your organization is going to develop new services and how they're then going to move to day two operations, how you're going to run that environment and progress and what the life cycle of your services are, means generally there is a place for public cloud, but it's not one or the other. Right. It's not I'm all on-prem. I'm that, you know, it's in the same way of saying cloud first. It's the same way of saying I'm on-prem first. Right. You just need to kind of decide what services sit in the right place. And then at that point, you can move your business forward, because if you make a decision that's a mandate for one or the other, you are definitely restricting the organization.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say from my side is it's, you know, we started off with this sort of around the cloud in terms of it's public, it's on-premise, and now we've got this term hybrid, because I think people are realizing you can't have one or the other. So that sort of element has come into play now, which is important, really, because I think it's an acceptance that it's not one or the other, it's probably both. But what the most important factor for me when I look at something is not so much the underlying technology like cloud or whatever, it's the portability or mobility of that data, because to me it's the most important commodity we have. Our data, and where do we want it to live? So 1 minute here, 1 minute there, and having that ability to flex and move things around is more important to me than vendor A or vendor B in terms of whether it's cloud or on-prem. And that's kind of where I'd want to focus on more so than, you know, Azure's the best thing since sliced bread kind of thing.
Yeah, just to pick up on that, I think, you know, of all the meetings that I've had over the last months, or certainly, yeah, let's say months, I think the one message that really seems to come across is this idea of freedom of choice. It's we have to do something, but whatever we do, we don't want that to lock us into some kind of predefined path for the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months. So I'm not talking about that from a technology perspective, you know, or even saying so this is why you should do X or Y. I'm just saying that there's a sense that as I talk to people that, you know, because of maybe misfires in the past or the simple speed at which these things are changing right now, there is this underlying feeling of I need to do something, but and I have to do something, but I want to feel comfortable that it does give us that freedom of choice to be able to change, to adapt, to course correct, to do something different in the future.
So I agree with you, Matt. I think, you know, that is definitely the case. But what about simply, I mean, the one thing I've always tried to highlight on people, I think they call it day two and all that sort of stuff nowadays. It's got fancy names, but ultimately, a lot of it comes down to how you operate your technology. You know, we can all look at things like cloud or even new technology from a new vendor, but actually putting it into an operating model that actually allows us to validate it against everything else we're already doing actually can be very tricky. I'll give you an example, just something as simple as, you know, if you've invested heavily in scripting or you've been heavily invested in automation, and then the vendor comes along and says, well, we're now not going to support that platform anymore, and now we're going to go with this strategic platform, and the APIs between the two or the CLIs are totally different. Now you could be in a big world of pain, and that might be an opportunity for you to go to another vendor and say, you know what, you want our business? You need to support this new stuff and help us rewrite it, and then we'll go with you because we've got to rewrite anyway. You know, that operating model can be so difficult if you aren't sort of on top of it. What do you think about that, Lee?
Yes, it's a challenge, and I think, you know, we mentioned earlier on about the change of the risk around skills change. We're seeing a fundamental change in the market, which is around operating models are changing because technology is changing. We're seeing a higher degree of software-driven infrastructure. And so the kind of old models of, and I'm sure people will argue the point, but three-tier architecture models, they're starting to blend about how they work and how they operate in a lot of different ways. And all of a sudden, the old operating models of three-tier are looking pretty clunky and cumbersome, and there's a lot of overlap. So we are helping organizations, and we're seeing organizations that are really reevaluating how their operating models run and looking to change that so that they have things like reducing down the hardware support type teams and moving individuals up to cross-skilling for control plane management, making sure that they understand, right, okay, how do all of these facets work together? Because it is becoming highly complex and very different to a distinct three-tier architecture operating model. I see that as the biggest challenge today because businesses are trying to release that resource to really drive value back to the organization because the IT budgets are always and always have been under constraint. And are they growing or shrinking or flat? But the budget is elsewhere in the business now. So these resources are looking to get involved in different business units and projects that they are leveraging technology, and those resources are then adding value back to the business. So you need to have a very efficient, productive operating team that is cross-skilled to then be able to release resources to add value in all different business units across the organization. I probably see that as one of the biggest challenges for IT leadership today is how do we run this in an efficient way when this old single skilled or siloed skills was the way of doing it for many, many years.
I would concur with you, Lee, on that one, because we're in that situation now where we have those particular teams that do particular technologies. And there's a big mindset change now in terms of, well, what is the storage engineer of the future? What is the Linux engineer of the future? And so on. Actually, do these roles actually start to overlap? And we've started to make inroads into that sort of area to say, well, actually, we don't have individual teams anymore. We have more of a platform team, for example. But when you look at the profile, say, for example, for storage engineer now, you go, well, actually, you shouldn't be thinking about it just as managing the hardware anymore. It's now about you having to develop to become almost a coder. because you're having to do things through software now, and you're having to get more familiar with Python, Ansible, Terraform, whatever, to be able to manage that state. And the real idea behind that is so that you can release that code back and that other people can consume it, but not be a specialist anymore. And there's certainly a move in my organization towards that way of working, but it's the sort of it's the tipping point as to managing the legacy and the future stuff as well that we have to manage at the same time. And that's always the biggest challenge, because you really want to focus on developing the value, but then you've also got all the, as I say in sort of agile terms, the technical debt that you have to deal with in the background as well. In the end, from an organizational point of view, we're going to have to restructure to really align with how technology is moving. I mean, the cadence of technology change is huge at the moment. It's changing constantly. And we as an organization, definitely from an organizational point of view, will have to change. The day two operations is a very important function. There's no point building a Ferrari if you've got no idea of how to manage it from day two. And that's kind of, there is a mindset change in terms of that, because as well, technology hasn't really moved very quickly in the past. And now we're having to deal with quick changes. There isn't that much time really to pick up skills. And that's part of the change as well in the day two operations that we see at the moment.
I was just going to say, I think that's really interesting, because if I look back 10 years ago when I was probably still doing stuff that was hands-on or classed as hands-on, I was very much told that we were not going to create our own code, that we were not going to create stuff that we then had to support ourselves, that everything we could push off to being done by the vendor we would do, because in the organizations I was working in, they just didn't want code that they had to manage. They wanted to get away from that completely and have it almost all off-the-shelf purchased technology. Now, obviously, that mindset is changing completely into a new model. And it's really fascinating to see that that's the direction we've headed. But I wonder whether that's some of that is because the platform and the products have become simple enough for us not to need dedicated people, as you said, looking after hardware. We can now look after function and say, this box or this cloud service now provides this function. All we should be worried about is how we integrate that function into our operations and not how that technology physically works in terms of things like disks and all that sort of side of things.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I think that's the way things are moving.
And from your perspective, Matt, as the sole vendor on this call, we already know you're changing your services and products to do that. But, you know, that's had to be a conscious change, because if you didn't do it, then somebody else would be coming along and stealing your lunch and, you know, that you'd be losing out.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've seen the gradual shift. I mean, obviously FlexPod was our original sort of converged infrastructure platform. And I remember talking to a company who was looking at FlexPod, and we had exactly this conversation. I said to them, the value you'll get from this is as you start to flatten your organization and treat this as an end-to-end system. And we were desperately trying to convince them that the way they would get benefit was to change the way that they operated. And they just wouldn't change. And the FlexPod arrived, they took the servers and gave it to the server team, the network to the network team, the storage to the storage team. And then we came back to them 6 months later and they said, you know, it was not the technology that caused us a problem. It was fundamentally our lack of ability to change. So I think now that we've into hyper-converged infrastructures, you know, we are collapsing these tiers down and much more tightly integrating them and simplifying that and providing layers of automation that does mean that you don't need the levels of skills in each individual area that I think we've had before. And then I think just one final point on it, it's now people looking at consumption models. If we're starting to see these kind of almost public cloud on-premise kind of environments that can operate in that much more simple way that we can restructure our teams around them, how can we also build consumption models into them that give us more of a cloud-like consumption and operating cost model as well? So I think that's the sort of the next step that this is moving on to.
So getting back to our very original discussion, we were talking about inflection points and we were talking about platforms and how we actually choose different vendors and migrate between them. After our approximately 40 minutes of conversation, where do we think we've reached in terms of a decision point? You know, if people are listening to this, which there will be many people listening to this, and they're listening thinking, well, all of that was great, what can we give them as a takeaway that can actually make them think, this is how I should go back and think of it in my business, and this is what I should think about doing when I'm next looking for that next refresh or the next piece of technology or the next business solution I'm trying to solve? I'll start with you, Cam.
From my point of view, it's a continual journey. You'd never stop looking in terms of the technology and where it might have a natural alignment or fit in terms of the inflection point. It may not naturally align with the refresh cycle, but you know that you're preparing and you're ready for when that change comes. But I think with the market technology-wise moving so quickly, there's a lot of points where you have to almost take the data and see what is the right fit for you now and what might be the right fit for the future.
From my point of view, as an inflection point, I don't see enough in the market, is that there is a clearly defined target architecture platform model from a business, which overlays to a target operating model. That overlapped delivers against the outcomes for the business. That clarity allows you to make the right decision from a technology perspective because it fits into that model. And that would be my view, that if you don't have that, make sure that's in place, and then the technology decisions will almost answer themselves.
For my final point on that one, I think at any point where there is a potential for disruption is an inflection point. And I think that's what people should be just thinking about in the back of their minds. If disruption is inevitable, then that is a really good opportunity for us to just take stock and think about, you know, do we carry on doing what we've been doing because that's going to disrupt us anyway? Or do we take this as an opportunity to do something different because that may be better for what the business is looking for us to achieve going forward?
Great. So if anybody wants to follow you, Matt, online, stalk you, learn about NetApp in a bit more detail, where can we point them towards?
So on the Twitters at MTJWatts, and also my blog, which is watts-innovating.com.
Brilliant. Lee, do you make any effort to follow social media or get involved? Like, you want to share with anybody?
I probably am not noisy enough, but I will make an effort to ensure that I am noisy moving forward. You can go to mti.com or at Lee Nolan MTI, which is on Twitter.
Perfect. And Cam?
I do have a Twitter handle, which is at Cam Panesar, but most of my activity really is on LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Well, guys, thanks very much for joining me today. It's been a great conversation, and I look forward to at some point catching up with you again in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.